Hi, everybody. Today is Tuesday, April 1st, 2025, and our friend Pepe Escobar is back with us. Welcome back, Pepe.
Always a pleasure. With you, Nima, anytime, even if I am in Mars on an Elon Musk ship. Okay. Opa, it's Nima. Yes.
Let's get started with Yemen. Pepe, you've been there and you've been traveling in Yemen. Yeah, here is so beautiful.
For our audience, yeah, now I carry Yemen with me.
They're fighting back. They're fighting back so hard. And did you see any sort of sign that they're going to change their policy, or they're waiting for the United States to see what they're doing in order to respond to the United States?
Well, first of all, they will never back down, because for them it's a matter of honor. It's their word, their honor, their moral clarity, their strength of spirit, their commitment, the brotherly love that they express, and the preoccupation that they express with their brothers and sisters in Palestine. This is a state policy, which is I've been doing a lot of podcasts for quite a while. This is our second conversation on Yemen, but it's very important to remind our audience that in the Yemeni system of government, of course, there is a supreme leader, which is Al-Houthi, but the decisions, yeah, he offers spiritual guidance. And of course, based on pure Quranic principles. But the political decisions are taken by a high political council of 9 members, of which I had the honor to meet 4 last week. And of course, the small group of us who were there, we discussed extensively with them. And of course, it's absolutely unified and consensual vision. They know exactly what they are doing. They stand by what they are doing. For instance, in some of the conversations, I was trying to tell them, of course, they may know that all across the global majority, the global South, they have enormous, enormous support, especially young people everywhere, including people in the global North as well. But at the same time, in the conversations, I was saying, do you really know who you are up against? This is a bunch of nuclear armed psychos. These people are extremely dangerous, and they are set to destroy you. And their president is actually saying it. His own words, we're going to annihilate the Houthis and Yemen. So many of us, especially after what we lived last week, which is something indescribable. I wrote a first column, which is already published on Sputnik in Moscow International. And there's another one coming out tonight, which is a follow-up that is more introspective, even with a few metaphysical overtones as well. Well, I try to explain to a global audience the purity, the strengths and the commitment of the Houthis. It's immensely serious. And it's out of the question that this will be understood, especially now with this White House and with this president. But they know who they're up against, and they are unflinching, Nima. You know, you start talking about what could happen, right? They say, hey, it doesn't matter. We will win. it's immensely impressive, no doubt. And of course, while we were there, we could see that the escalation, for instance, from Monday last week to the middle of the week to when we left this past weekend, you could feel the escalation and the amount of strikes. You know, we were like 6, 7, 8 a day. Soon they are 20 to 30 a day. And maybe soon they're going to be more than 50 a day. This is extremely serious. And obviously, because they don't have ground in, the Americans don't have ground intel. They only have their satellite network. They have no idea what they're bombing. Very, very important. They are bombing civilian installations. When I left at the airport, they bombed the civilian airport of Sana'a. If I remember well, at least two times. I saw debris a little bit everywhere, and I took a picture of a fighter jet that was hit by the Americans. They probably thought it was a military plane. No, it was a civilian plane, by the way. So this is going to get much uglier. And I have a working hypothesis that I was discussing this with Larry yesterday, Nima, in fact, that this build-up in Diego Garcia is not necessarily for Iran. It could be to flatten Yemen, to destroy Yemen. And many of us, we are very, very worried about it. Of course, it's a working hypothesis, but it makes sense. And my own personal interpretation, considering what I saw, considering the escalation, and considering the signs coming from the cycles, the Zionist cycles, and very important, today the CENTCOM chief is meeting with the bloody Israeli in an underground bunker in Tel Aviv. So they are plotting something absolutely horrendous. I think there's going to be a terror massacre bombing of Yemen very, very soon. I'm very pained to see that, to say that, but I think this is quite possible. It's another terror tactic, of course, and they think that they can terrorize Ansarallah and the Ansarallah leadership and make them submit. Forget it. Not going to happen. And by the way, they keep destroying Reapers every day. Né? I think they destroyed the 16th Reaper yesterday. Yeah. And it will keep going. Exactly. And it will keep going. It will keep going. And something very, very important. Friday, I had a first-class conversation with a top commander, Mr. Al-Bukaiti. Very well-educated. He lived outside of Yemen, speaks good English. So we could have a long conversation. In fact, he said, you should wait for a few surprises coming. So, you know, they have stuff in their hands or in their underground silos that they haven't used yet. And immediately after that, we had this conversation on Friday. On the weekend, the Yemeni military said that they had hit the E-2 aircraft that is the command and control center for the USS Truman. Very important. And I was talking to Larry about that yesterday. Not a peep from the Pentagon. So this might be the real thing. You know, this might be one of the surprises, in fact. And if this happened, wow. Can you imagine? They are capable of paralyzing the comm of an aircraft carrier. So this may be just the beginning, in fact. So we should not underestimate what they have in store, their surprises, and especially their resilience. Among the other top diplomats and academics that we spoke to, they were always outlining that the force of Ansarallah is a mix of studying the past, learning lessons from the past from other movements, mobilization of Yemenis, which is true. That's why many of them, even when I went to the souk at night in Sada, in some of the conversations, they were saying, now, the whole of Yemen now is Houthi. Of course, we cannot go to the Hadramut desert in the east and see if this is true or not. But it seems like it. There is a national consensus, especially now, because they are being attacked by the superpower. So they immediately understand that this is an attack on the whole nation. So obviously they have to rally behind the Houthis and behind Ansarallah. And the third element that everybody was talking about is resilience. These people are immensely resilient considering they have been attacked and under war and all sorts of harassment, a cholera epidemic, famine, you name it, for 10 years, which what we were sort of marking in the middle of last week when they took us to Sada, in the middle of the night, practically, you know. And only when I was in Sada and only when I started to talk to people, I said, of course we had to be here today, because it was 1 year, 1 day after the 10th year of the commemoration or inverted commemoration of the first Saudi strike against Yemen in 2015, which started the very, very long war, which has not finished. That this armistice that they clinched a few years ago, the Saudis want to destroy Yemen. And this will not end. And there's a very, I would say, absolutely horrible possibility that the Saudis will be alongside the Americans in this terrorist bombing of Yemen from now on, because the Saudis want to grab Yemen for themselves. So it's an extremely serious situation. And all of us that went there and had this experience of a lifetime, and of course we became attached to the people who received with such nobility and grace, and you know, we worry about them, because it's going to be really, really, wow. This is what Highway to Hell is about, you know. And the President of the United States seems to be convinced that he will achieve something if he decapitates the leadership of Ansarallah, even if he has to flatten a great deal of the country for that. And the guys at CENTCOM, this is how they think. This is what they are already behaving. And obviously now in close cooperation with Israelis. So the situation is really bleak.
The point that you mentioned, Pepe, that I think it's so much important is the resilience. The resilience comes from the culture of Yemenis.
From the culture.
But also comes from a decade of war with the West. Together with the Arab states. This war, we're talking about Russia, how the war in Ukraine has influenced the Russian army. They're masters of any sort of war if something happens between NATO and Russia. Mm-hmm. And the Yemenis, for this sort of war that they're fighting, this sort of fighting, they know what they're doing, because they've been doing it for a decade. They're learning. This is a process of learning and getting much more consolidated in the way that you're reacting to the threats coming from the outside.
Absolutely correct. And add to it the military experience, of course, their own military research and their own military accomplishments, which, of course, we couldn't have access to Yemeni military secrets as foreigners, it's obvious. But the glimpses of information that we got from many of the officials we talked to, look, everything is indigenously developed. Of course, in the past, we had help from Maoist China, from the USSR, from Russia, from Iran, obviously. But we learned our lessons. And they have a very sophisticated indigenous military industry. Not to mention everything that is hidden underground, and the Americans have absolutely no clue where it is. Under mountains. Don't forget that northern Yemen is a mountainous terrain, and deeper north in Yemen, near the Saudi border, I could see that from the plane. When we took off, it was in the morning, in great visibility, and I was glued to the looking outside, and there were mountains and canyons very, very high, and under that you can hide anything you want, and the Americans won't find it. They're bombing blindly, most. So This is one of the reasons why we fear that because they cannot see much and they have less than zero ground information, they're going to start bombing at ease, at random. And obviously, we're going to have the civilian casualties mount. For the moment, they are bombing civilian residential buildings, civilian buildings in residential neighborhoods, hospitals like the one we saw in... It was an in-construction cancer hospital that we saw in Sada. But this is going to get much, much worse. And it could have a sort of Gaza effect. The Americans might start behaving in Yemen like the psychos are behaving in Gaza. And that's why we are so worried, you know.
And it doesn't seem that the United States is getting intelligence.
No.
That
no.
much accurate.
That's Nima. First of all, they have less than zero intelligence on the ground. I remember my experiences in Afghanistan, for instance. You know, so they have no bloody clue what they are doing. And spies, they may have one or two Saudi spies working, especially in northern Yemen, even in the Sada region, which is very close to the border, it's a 2-hour drive from the border. But that's it. And these guys, the minute that they are spotted, wow, you go, heads roll. And Yemen intelligence, from what I saw, including the guys who were around us and protecting us, they are very competent. Don't mess with them. Very competent. And obviously they have commandos like Russian Spetsnaz, Yemeni style, you know. So it's very, very sophisticated. The military security intel apparatus is very sophisticated. And you cannot fool them. And it's very hard to move around in Yemen, even undercover, because they'll find you. There's no question they will find you. So that leads once again to blind bombing, which is what CENTCOM is already doing, and they will increase.
When it comes to the Trump administration, since Trump took power in the United States, whenever he talks about Canada, Mexico, yeah, they have to listen to what I'm telling them, or bad things happen. Bad thing happens.
if you don't follow what I'm saying, bad things are going to happen to you. Yeah, 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 yeah. No,
it's the same case for Russia and Iran as well. China, you name it.
Everybody, the whole global South, Nima, if you think about it, until yesterday, or maybe it continues, he was trying to basically impose tariffs on the whole global majority. So, you know, I in my Telegram channel, I published a slightly tweaked Turkish proverb, which is, everybody knows it in Turkey. I wonder if there is an Iranian version. You can tell me if there is a similar Iranian version. When a king comes to the palace surrounded by a coterie of lunatics, psychos, warmongers, etc., the palace becomes a circus, which is exactly what happened. And now the circus ringmaster is a Mr. Disco Inferno, surrounded by his psychos, lunatics, warmongers, etc., or playing stupid people like this new Secretary of Defense. He's an imbecile, former Fox News presenter. And you can see that he's an imbecile if you read the Sigma Gate prints. It's all there, in his own words, showing how imbecile he is. So this is extremely, extremely dangerous. And obviously, in terms of his own narcissism and megalomania, every day he goes up a notch. It's like he is absolutely in love to the sound of the mendacities that he proclaims every day in his own voice. So it's a circle, man. It's an Ouroboros of his own image, his own mirror play. You know, He says something, and then he says something completely different, and then he makes both, and then he changes his mind completely, and then he turns upside down, and then he does a 180 degree, and the next day, he starts all over again. What I find absolutely fascinating is when you compare all this carnival of mendacities, this kaleidoscope of mendacities, day after day after day, monopolizing the new cycle all over the planet, of course, is the reaction of Russia, China, and Iran, which is from the three of them, the top three BRICS, measured, polite, cautious. When they say something, they mean it, or sometimes they spend days without saying anything. They're just listening to the cacophony, to the noise from the other side. For instance, today, we had Wang Yi in Moscow meeting Lavrov. One of the things that Wang Yi said, which I would like to quote in his own words, but I cannot find it here at the moment. But basically, Wang Yi was saying that the United States is sick, but they are treating the whole planet as patients. This is more or less what he said. Brilliant. He encapsulated this circus with one sentence. And, of course, they were preparing a summit in May between Xi Jinping and Putin, which probably is going to take place on Victory Day, May 9, in Moscow, because Xi Jinping will be there. He will be one of the top guests, right? So this summit is going to be extremely important, because this summit is going to put in perspective what happened since Trump came to power, the absolute out-of-control inanities and threats, and I'm going to tariff everybody and I'm going to bomb everybody style of his presidency. And obviously the Chinese and the Russians, very rational actors, say, okay, what is our game plan from now on? We know who we're dealing with now in detail. So, okay, let's establish our game plan. And the game plan, it's not only the Russia-China strategic partnership. It's their influence on BRICS, their influence on the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, their influence in terms of finding alternative payment systems, their influence in coordinating exactly this let's say, this BRICS laboratory of finding new ways. They're going to talk about trade. They're going to talk about the international north-south transportation corridor. They're going to talk about the new Silk Roads. They're going to talk about the Chinese corridors that go through Russia that should be upgraded. So it's going to be huge. And, of course, their leadership of the global south and the global majority, because now it rests on them. Okay, the other side, we see what they are. It's a psycho empire in total delusion, going downhill and trying to drag everybody together. Going downhill as a means of soften the fall. The fall is inevitable, we all know. But at the same time, the thing is, the global majority, global south, they are trying to stay on the surface and not only escape from this precipice, this vortex, but to build another world. And that has not changed since the summit in Kazan last year. So this summit in May, Putin, Xi Jinping, is going to be, let's say, remember the first one, Nima. I was in Moscow when they met, the first one. And at the end, she said to Putin, we are in the middle of changes that we have not seen in 100 years. Absolutely correct. But now, this new summit, they have to start building the blocks to actually accelerate these changes. And all of that, of course, will facilitate the downfall of the empire at the same time. And the problem is, the more that Trump, of course, he's not a strategist, he's not a thinker, he doesn't even read. But instinctively, when he sees that everything is escaping from his grip, he's going to become even more unpredictable, even more volatile, and even more dangerous than he already is. So can you imagine for all of us what that means? All of us means, and not only us, but, you know, the planet as a whole. So that's where we're heading. It's immensely more complex and dangerous than it was 3-4 months ago. And we thought that we would have some respite. Nah? Nope. Now we are in front of what it is. An out-of-control president of the United States, ready to launch wars. That is, never believe president of the United States in an electoral campaign. Never. This is what you get. Surrounded by Zionists, more and more dangerous because they are in danger as well. And once again, the dynamic between trying to find a, between commas, solution in Ukraine so he can concentrate on the war that he really wants, which is in West Asia, which is Yemen, Iran, and the whole axis of resistance. This is his war, and this is his patrons, financiers, donors' war, and this is the Zionist war. So compared to it, Ukraine, they already know that they lost. This Sunday, was Saturday or Sunday, this weekend, the Jewish Times or Tel Aviv Times, also known as the New York Times, very long article where they basically give away the game. It was always an American war, and we fucked up. There it is, you know. So let's move to the word that really matters for them, right? Which is the Zionist war against the axis of resistance.
The tragedy is that, as you mentioned, the case of Pete Hegseth, he's not any sort of a help to Donald Trump. He's just making things worse for the administration.
Absolutely. You're right. Absolutely. And whatever was the, let's say, the intrinsic motivations of SignalGate, who leaked what, if it was a CIA infiltration, MI6 or CIA MI6 together, whatever it was. When you look at the so-called substance, which means what they were discussing, it's a bunch of clowns. It's obvious for anyone with minimal knowledge of how government should work, and of course geopolitics, the basics, you know. Who profits from that? Of course, we know who profits. All the warmongering factions of the deep state, no question. These are the ones who profit. But the fact that when you see these people talking, I said, can you believe that these people are national security, Pentagon, vice presidency at this level? Wow. So at least in terms of public service, now you cannot fool anybody. This is what they really are. In their own words. It's frightening, isn't it, Nima? It's actually frightening. Yeah.
Huh? Yes, it is. And you see, the Marco Rubio is not that much involved. He's not the Secretary of State. <Who's> the...
Well, Nima, I'm going to, I plan to be in Iran in 1 month. So this would be very enlightening. I want to see inside Iran what's the mood, the consensus, what they are discussing, and all that. What Larijani said from yesterday to today, it's a bomb. Literally. It's a bomb, isn't it? You agree, no? Yeah. My interpretation is that he could only say that with a green light from Khamenei. Yeah. So it's obvious that Khamenei gave him the green light to say, look, if they attack our nuclear program, we're going to be forced to do what we don't want. We will build a nuclear bomb. So, you know, the Iranian position changed now completely.
two things, Pepe, about what Larry Jennings, he said that first, he's a very important character in Iran. Extremely.
And he advises Khamenei. Exactly.
He's totally linked, not just him, his family.
His family.
They're the elites of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says this, and nobody said it before at this rank, at this.
Nobody said it like this before.
As you mentioned, he had the permission to say it. He had the. And we know that when you follow the Iranian media, you know when they're saying something, they mean it. They don't just play around with the words.
They don't play around. You're right. Yes.
This is the. I don't know if they're getting it in the West. They're understanding what would be the Iranian position, because just going over Iran and bombing Iran, and I don't know that. Look at Yemen. Look at what they did in Yemen. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing gonna come out of that. And bombing Iran is even worse. It's gonna be a disaster. I don't know if they know the scale of the problem that they're dealing with.
They don't. They don't, Nima. They don't. These people still refer to Iran as the mullahs. Only imbeciles with a negative IQ talk about Iran and the mullahs, you know. They don't even try to understand the system of government. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No. And the whole agenda is driven by the Zionist lobby in Washington. Everything that they say was previously approved by AIPAC, you know, all that crap. So obviously, they don't know Iran from the inside. They don't know how Iran works. They don't know about public opinion. They don't know about the system of government. They don't know about who are the important players, who they are aligned with, how Iran makes policy. Nothing. Nothing. They don't even know anything about the strategic partnership Iran-Russia signed in January. By the way, did you see Putin basically saying today that if Iran is attacked, the consequences are going to be tragic? This is code for you better think twice before you do anything. Without being threatening, aggressive, no, the Putin style, right? They don't listen. And they haven't listened to the Russians for 3 years on Ukraine. They haven't listened to Lavrov, to Putin, to, you know, the leadership, nothing. Among other things, that's why they have a war in their hands that they lost, and now they have to do something to extricate themselves from it, and they still don't know what to do. Especially the president, who has no bloody clue anything about the war. But he wants to dictate terms. And there's nobody inside Washington to say, Mr. Trump, you don't have the cards. Who has the balls to say that to him? Nobody. So he thinks that he can dictate terms to Russia. And obviously the Russian reaction is priceless. That's because they're playing along. Okay, I'm gonna have another phone call. Okay. We're studying your proposal. We have a different proposal. The Russians are playing it beautiful. You know, with aplomb, very serious, very diplomatic. And at the same time, they have no illusions. And this, if you follow only Lavrov, it's not that from one day to another, Lavrov is saying, okay, the Americans, fantastic, let's make a deal. No. Everybody knows, and Lavrov knows the Americans very well. He's been negotiating with them since forever. But the Russians are playing it irrationally, which is what they do. The Chinese, the same thing. Today, Wang Yi went, I would say, one step ahead, saying that these people are sick and they want to treat the rest of the world as patients. This, from in terms of Wang Yi, this is already an enormous step up, you know. And of course, they are preparing this summit in May. This is what really counts, because that's where they will be honing their common position on all these issues at the same time, and especially how to deal with the circus ringmaster.
The other thing that is happening, not in the Middle East nor in Ukraine, is in the East, in China, Japan, and South Korea. They have
the first
economic dialogue. This is huge. This
enormous.
Is game changer. And no
for the first time, Nima, for the first time, they are adopting a common position. And a common position safeguarding their trade and commercial interests. Don't forget, these are trading nations, powerful trading nations. I said, oh, look, that the circus ringmaster wants to break the supply chain all over the world. We're not going to, no way. We're going to do our own thing. So in one overarching aspect, this is solidifying the integration of Eurasia and Asia as a whole. It's an extremely positive development from the outside this time, not by the players across Asia. Fascinating. But we could, of course, and until yesterday, nobody would predict it, but it makes total sense. It didn't come out of the blue. In fact, I would say that the players for the past 2 months, at least they have been looking at Trump's actions and they say, yes, we have to come up with something different to deal with it and to safeguard our interests. So this is absolutely enormous. And I see South Korea, for instance, as because South Korea has excellent relations with Russia as well. Very important. Very, very important. South Korea could be a sort of anchor. I say, look, remember when they attacked us during the financial crisis in the 90s? Okay, now they want to attack us in a different vein, but with the same targets. To drain our resources, attack against our currencies, against our production networks, against our supply chains. So they learned the lesson from the 90s, the financial crisis.
So
I lost the song. Yes.
Muito obrigado, Pepe.
Muito obrigado a você também, Anima.
Grande prazer, como sempre.
Como sempre. Today was a sort of a starter.
Yeah.
Okay. next week we'll go longer. Today we're still, a Yemeni universe,
Yeah.
Next week we'll go deeper into the ghosts of war, which are now circling everywhere.
Sure. Yeah. Grande prazer.
Grande prazer.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Muito obrigado. Tchau, tchau. Até.
Tchau, tchau.